Welcome to Shoot First, Ask Questions Later, where we research the response of our past and review their relevance for today. This is your host, Moshe Kurtz. Welcome to another episode of Shoot First, Ask Questions Later. Today we have a real schuss, a real privilege to be joined by Rabbi Tzvi Ram, and we're going to be talking about Rav Moshe Feinstein and his approach to geirus, to conversions. Now, many times when we talk about conversions, and if you go to just some typical Shavuos night shiur on the topic of geirus, chances are the topic is about what kind of beis din can do geirus, who's a valid geir, what are the conditions, which is certainly worthy of discussion. But I think what we're going to do something interesting today with Rabbi Ram is we're going to talk about what does life look like after someone converts, and specifically the halachos that get involved in one's family life that could emerge from such a new circumstance and such a milestone in their life. Rabbi Tzvi Ram is the Rabbi Emeritus of the Bialystoker Synagogue on the Lower East Side of Manhattan. He currently serves as the Rav at Congregation Torah Chesed in Kew Garden Hills, is an instructor of Talmud at Yeshiva University's Isaac Breuer College, and is the administrator of the Manhattan Beis Din for Conversions. And of course, Rabbi Ram also plans to make Aliyah within the next 2 years, Bezras Hashem. God willing, it should all go smoothly, b'mehera v'yameinu. It is a huge schus to have you with us, and especially with your very natural expertise in geirus. I was wondering if we can start off by not just telling us the particular shaila and scenario in this tshuva of Rav Moshe that we're about to look at, but why you chose also this specific angle to go with.
Sure. First of all, Rabbi Kurtz, it's a very big schus for me to be here on the podcast, and just yishna v'atzlach on all the podcasts that you're doing. It's really a wonderful thing to be able to bring tshuvas and different personalities to the broader public. So among, as you mentioned, among my various rabbinical involvements is the fact that I've had the schus to be the administrator of the Manhattan Beis Din for Conversions since 2010. So I guess that would make that coming up in 13 years now. The Manhattan Beis Din for Conversions is the RCA affiliate Beis Din that covers conversion in the New York, in the greater New York area. So we handle RCA-related conversions in the five boroughs of New York, the suburbs, upstate. It happens to be, as we'll see in a moment, the Shiloh that we're dealing with actually came from Syracuse. So theoretically, had I been alive in 1962 when the Shiloh was asked, and had I been running the Beis Din, it's possible that the Shiloh would have come to us, or the case would have come to us. Be that as it may, our Beis Din oversees the conversions of approximately 100 people a year from all over the greater New York area. And, you know, Baruch Hashem, we have the schus to be involved not only during the conversion process, but to keep up with, you know, number of the converts in the life afterwards. And as you mentioned, something that the tshuva focuses on is the relationship that a ger gioris maintains with his or her family members during and after the conversion. In the case of the tshuva, we're going to see in the many years after the conversion. And it touches really on a sensitivity, which I think is important to develop in the broader Orthodox community. First of all, the knowledge that there are many gerim among us, even though we're not always aware of that fact. And there is a mitzvah d'arais of ahava sager. And, you know, one of the best ways that we can fulfill that mitzvah is having a heightened awareness of many of the struggles and challenges that geirim go through, not only during the process itself, but in the hopefully many, many years that they are part of the Orthodox community following the geirus. And this tshuva touches on some of those issues. It touches on an issue which I've heard raised by many a ger or gioris themselves, namely, what is the relationship I'm supposed to have with my non-Jewish family, you know, once I convert? And I think also just philosophically, it happens to touch on a very interesting philosophical issue, which, again, we'll get into, you know, to what extent does the Torah obligate non-Jews in concepts or obligations that go beyond the strict, very circumscribed list of the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nei Noach. I find that a very fascinating philosophical issue, and one that Rav Moshe really touches on in a very, very interesting kind of way.
Absolutely. And I appreciate you giving us a bit of an overview of the landscape for the Beis Din that that you run. I'm just curious, before we jump into the tshuva itself, how many Batei Dinim, you know, established Batei Dinim in America are doing conversions? Like, where do you find your Beis Din situated within the broader system, if that's even the right word, of conversions?
Right. It's hard to answer that question. I think one of the wonderful things that was created in 2007 when the RCA created its network of Batei Din, and there are 12 affiliate Batei Din across the United States and Canada, which are carrying out geiros according to the standards of the RCA. Besides just setting a certain bar for standards, which I think is what's usually spoken about in terms of what the RCA did, they also just created records of what's actually going on the ground.
Wow.
A lot of the Batei Din that are out there are ad hoc, are informal, and there's just no record of what's actually being done. In other words, if you were to ask me the question, how many people are Megayer through Orthodox Batei Din in the United States in a given year, I don't think anyone knows the answer to that question. I can tell you how many we do. I can tell you how many the system of the GPS, you know, what's the Geiros procedures and standards, you know, of the RCA does in a given year. And all of that is documented, and all of that is on file, and all of that can be accessed, you know, again, obviously by those, you know, there's confidentiality, but by those, you know, people who want their own documents, or, you know, the rabbis within the system can call up and see whether, you know, can call up a file and can see whether somebody converted in such and such a year. But, you know, if you're Megayer not through that system, there's really no general record as to what happened.
You're saying, like, it's like almost, you know, you have three rabbis. They just finished making a basin for Ataras Nedarim. They could then just go to the local mikvah. They could get a mole together, and they could do a mom and pop conversion. And we would never really know what happened. And then years down the line, people want to figure out the yuchsin and figure out if this person is actually converted, is legitimate. And it creates a lot of headache to become a private investigator and to figure out the basis for it. So what your basin provides, among many things, is really just a record and an assurance that this conversion has been done the proper way, and it'll be recognized also now by the chief rabbin in Eretz Yisrael, I believe.
Right, 100%. We have an agreement with the chief rabbin going back to 2007 that whatever we do is automatically recognized, and that's been tested and held firm, you know, many, many times over with people making aliyah and getting married in Eretz Yisrael. I can tell you just from experience, some of the conversions we've done over the years are people who have probably been already converted, you know, properly, kados v'chadin. So why are they coming to us? Because they don't have paperwork.
Right.
So they converted 20 years ago, 30 years ago. They lost the paper. Right. Sometimes the paper was never written. There are cases where a bezdin will convert somebody and say, you know, we'll get back to you and we'll give you documentation. And, you know, it falls through the cracks and it never happens. So sometimes that happened. Sometimes they lost the paper. Sometimes the rabbi can't be tracked down. The rabbi is dead. You know, they can't locate any documentation of the geirus. So again, you know, you could be, from HaKadosh Baruch Hu's perspective, you know, everything is fine. But we live in a world where if you don't show a document, there's no way to prove that it ever happened. So we've done conversions for people. Again, you know, the person seems to be a fine, upstanding Jew and certainly meets the standards for conversion, but they don't have documentation. So we'll have them, you know, immerse again in our presence. We'll write out a document that says basically this person, you know, claims that they converted in such and such a year, but there's no documentation of it. So we had them immerse in our presence again. And now you have a document, and now we have a document, and now we scan the document, and now everything is, you know, everything can be located, you know, by the people who are entitled to see that documentation, you know, when that documentation is required. Again, we live in a world where if it's not documented, it doesn't help all that much.
Right. And I know, like, on a personal level, it's very it's very difficult for individuals who converted with a private Basedan, and then they feel as if their whole gayrus has been challenged, and that they like, are you telling me I wasn't Jewish beforehand when we do a Gir L'Chumrah? But what your Basedan seems to offer, in addition to just the halakhic expertise that clearly all the Dayanim have, is the professionalism as well. And so that's excellent. And I appreciate you clarifying that for our listeners. So moving to the tshuva itself, so the scenario in the tshuva seems to be, from my understanding, is that there was a woman who converted. She now has children. And the question is, she seems to have kind of lost her relationship with her original family, particular with her mother. The mother is now sick, very ill, and she wants to see the grandkids. And so
She's never seen the
Bechlat. Wow. So she's never seen them at all. So I guess the question is where Moshe is going to deal with whether it's mutter or whether she is actually obligated to go see the original parents. I guess what we might want to ask also is, before you have to prove something is mutter, you have to first ask why it's usser. You know, what would be I understand on a halachic level, when someone converts, it's like they're, I don't want to say born again, it sounds Christian, but a kakata shanola dummy. So the question is, even on a technical level, if she's not considered related to her original non-Jewish family, why is she going to such a far extent to cut off ties altogether? Is this something that just happened because of strained relations, or was there some sort of like psak that she received that she was supposed to do that?
Right, the impression you get from the tshuva is that she, and again, it sounds like she had not really been in significant contact with her parents for the last 20 years before the tshuva was issued. That's, there's a brief reference made to that in the tshuva. It sounds like there was a decision made when she converted, either a decision that she made herself or a psak that was given to her by a rav, again, it's not clear, that it would be desirable for her to sever her relationships with her parents. Number one, on the halachic level, as you mentioned, gershin eskayer ketino kshino ladami, there's this concept in halacha that the ger is no longer considered to be related, to his or her biological relatives. So, in other words, on a halachic level, these people who brought me into the world are not actually my parents. But as you say, okay, so they're not my parents, but why can't I go visit them? So again, the tshuva seems to make reference to the fact that her thought process, or the thought process that was conveyed to her, when she converted, was that the less you have to do with your parents, the better. Your parents are not practicing Jews. And if you spend too much time with them, and especially if you bring the children to them, that will make it easier for you to lapse back into your prior non-Jewish lifestyle. The kids are going to be influenced by their grandparents to return to the non-Jewish lifestyle which the grandparents hold. And that's spiritually dangerous. So it would be best to cut off all contact with them. And again, it's not clear whether that was a rav who told her that or she decided on her own to do that, but that certainly seems to be the decision. The only reason in the tshuva she's questioning that decision is that the mother basically has gotten incredibly ill, is begging her to come and see her and visit her and bring the grandchildren. She hasn't seen the grandchildren. And now this woman, the convert, is having pangs of conscience, so to speak. What's the right thing to do? I mean, there's a human, natural human emotion.
It's really heartbreaking. As I read the tshuva, it's such a heartbreaking scenario, and it's not exclusive to Geirus. I recall I was learning through tshuvos in Ramosha Sternbach's. He has a kuntres, I think, in Chelik Aleph of Tshuvos and Hagos on kuntres Bali Tshuva. So Bali Tshuva are, in a certain sense, there's similar dynamics at play in which certain rabbanim will advise the Bali Tshuva, someone who's not observant then becomes halakhically observant, that's not a good idea to have, to bring the grandkids to see the grandparents, because then, terrible, they'll be influenced by them. It's on a very, I say this a little bit tongue in cheek. I remember, for those who grew up like in a little bit more of like the yeshivish community, and then you have the grandparents who have the TV at their house, and then you go over there and you can be influenced. But so I guess depends, you know, how much you want to zoom in. Everyone can have certain dynamics like that, but obviously when it comes to Geirus, it's much more profound. And I don't want to put you on the spot on this, but I'm assuming, I mean, you could tell me, I mean, when the Beis Din that you work with does Geirus, is this like a kind of advice that gets dispensed to Geirim, or is this seemingly like Yotzei Min HaKlal? I'm just trying to get what's the standard advice that's given to converts in terms of maintaining or not maintaining relations with their biological family?
Right. So spoiler alert, Rav Moshe is going to stress the the positive aspects of maintaining a relationship with the family. Right. Now, again, you know, he's going to come out and say that there's actually a chiyuv to maintain an obligation to maintain a certain level of contact with the convert's biological parents. And he's going to talk about what he thinks the halachic basis is for that. And, you know, certainly, you know, following that tone, which is set by Rav Moshe, we, and my sense is, but they didn't generally encourage the convert, the prospective convert during the process, to iron out a good relationship with their parents, to maintain contact with the parents, you know, to convey that although in a halachic sense, Gersha Nisgaya Kitino Chinoladomi, you're born again, so to speak, that's a concept which is more theoretical. It doesn't, in practical terms, mean that you sever your relationship with your parents. And actually, one of the things we have as part of the discussions, you know, leading up to the Geirus, is how do your parents feel about this? You know, are they, you know, you're becoming a Shomer Shabbos, you're becoming a Shomer Kashrus, you know, your kids are going to be going to, you know, yeshiva day schools. They're going to be leading a very different kind of lifestyle than their grandparents. How do they feel about all of that? It's actually interesting. Most of the time, the Geirim tell us that the parents are very supportive. Even in cases where, you know, a very standard answer we've heard many, many times is my parents say that, you know, belief in God is a wonderful thing. And as long as you believe in God, you know, that's great. And that's in cases even when the non-Jewish parents are devout, you know, in their Christianity or whatever religion they happen to have. Very often they tell the children, you know, if you believe in God, that's great, and we'll make everything else work out, which I would not have assumed on my own, but that seems to be very much, I guess, the ethos of America.
So that's right. That's reassuring to hear that, that, you know, just because someone's converting doesn't mean that they have to all of a sudden sever their relations, and that this is not necessarily representative of other cases of conversion. So what Rabbi Ram, what you just mentioned was there are certain considerations, certain arguments Rav Moshe makes in that not only, I think he says, Shalo rak shemu teres el shemu chuyeves lasus ratzon ima hanachris possession tovayla in banel levakra. So he actually says, not only is it mutter for you, not only is it permissible for you to go visit her, but there's an imperative. You are obligated to bring the children to visit her. So what exactly are his halachic and hashkafic arguments that he advances to make her obligated to fulfill this mother's wishes?
Rav Moshe quotes the psak in Shulchan Aruch, which in turn is based on a Rambam, that a ger is obligated to some extent in the mitzvah of kibud av va'em. He says that noeg bo miksas kavod, the ger is obligated to show a modicum of respect to his or her parents. And the reason given, both in the Shulchan Aruch and the Rambam, is that shelo yomru bo mikdushal chamur l'kedusha kala. People shouldn't say that the person was more observant when they were a non-Jew. They were more moral, more ethical when they were a non-Jew than when they converted. They converted, and then their morality, their ethics fell by the wayside. So Rav Moshe tries to figure out, what does that mean? What is the nature of the mitzvah of kibud av va'em that the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch identify the convert as having? After all, the Gemara seems pretty clear in Kiddushin that the mitzvah of kibud av va'em is not incumbent upon non-Jews. It's only incumbent upon Jews. The Gemara more or less says that straight out. So what does it mean that the ger has to treat his or her parent with a degree, a modicum of respect? And what's this argument that people shouldn't say that you became less moral and less ethical after having converted? So,
so it sounds like it's a more of an extrinsic concern, like mipnei eva, mipnei darchei shalom, as opposed to an inherent imperative. It's more like a PR consideration.
Right. So Rav Moshe quotes some achronim who seem to understand that language in that way. In other words, it's like he doesn't use this language exactly, but if you will, a Maris Ayin type of consideration. You know, in other words, people shouldn't look badly at, you know, the person who converts to Judaism because, you know, it looks like they're doing something less than they did as a non-Jew. As a non-Jew, you know, they were nice to their parents. They had a relationship with their parents. Now you're becoming Jewish and you're cutting off relations with your parents. Doesn't look nice. He considers that possibility, but ultimately the direction Rav Moshe moves in is to say that there is a fundamental and intrinsic obligation of kibud av va'em that the convert has. And not only that, but by extension, every non-Jew has an obligation to some extent of kibud av va'em vis-a-vis their biological parents. Now, this is a difficult argument to make on the surface because it goes against the Gemara in Kiddushin that seems to say explicitly that a non-Jew has no mitzvah of kibud av va'em.
Though we do have Duma ben Asina as the paradigm, who's a non-Jew.
Right, although it's in that context that the Gemara says that Dama ben Asina was not actually obligated.
Right, he was Eina Mitzuvosa. He volunteered it.
In other words, the Gemara says explicitly that, you know, as a non-Jew, he was actually not obligated in kibud av va'em. So, okay, he was a nice guy. Great, wonderful. He chose, you know, to
so the Gemara Dafka tells us that non-Jews are specifically not obligated. And now
right.
Rav Moshe is trying to make an argument that there is some sort of imperative of kibud av va'em, which seems to go ostensibly negate the Gemara and Kiddushin.
Exactly. So where does that come from? So Rav Moshe makes the following argument, which again, philosophically, I think this is fascinating. And again, just on a practical level, I think it's very, very important for Gerim and those who work with Gerim to internalize this. Because again, as I said, the message that we give to prospective converts is no, do not cut off, you know, relationships with your family, with your parents, whatnot. You know, you should encourage those relationships. You just have to figure out a way to not let your Judaism be compromised as a result of those relationships. Mm-hmm. Okay, but you can figure that out. There are ways to work that out. You know, but on a fundamental level, you know, the Torah wants you to strengthen your relationships with your parents. So why is that? So the philosophical underpinning that Rav Moshe suggests is that non-Jews are obligated to have midos tovos. That non-Jews are this, you know, it's the Sheva Mitzvos B'nei Noach is not an exhaustive list of everything that a non-Jew is obligated in. A non-Jew, like a Jew, is obligated to have good midos, to have good character traits. And one of the good midos that a non-Jew is obligated to have is Hakaras Hatov, is a sense of gratitude. That's not a Jewish thing to have Hakaras Hatov. That is a human thing to have Hakaras Hatov. He quotes the fact that after Adam eats from the Eitz Hadas, from the tree of knowledge, and God comes to him and says, you know, why'd you do that? And, you know, perhaps setting the tone for what would happen later on in history. He points to his wife and he says, you know, this woman you gave me, you know, she enticed me to eat from the tree of knowledge. So Chazal comment, Adam HaRishon was a kafoy tova. That's terrible. He was an ingrate. You know, he didn't have the proper gratitude. You know, God gives you a wife and you turn around and you say both to God and to her, you know, you messed me over. That's a lack of gratitude. So Rav Moshe says, okay, so it was a lack of gratitude. He wasn't Jewish. Who says that Adam HaRishon has to have gratitude? You see that this demand for a certain level of midos tovos, of good character traits, is not something uniquely Jewish. It's something that is inherent to being a human being and trying to be the best human being that you can.
Right.
As such, although the formal requirements of kibud av va'em, you know, things like not sitting in their place and, you know, having to bring them food and things like that, you know, there's certain formal requirements of kibud av va'em. Those are unique to the Jewish people, but the basic attitude of showing respect to your parents out of gratitude that they brought you into the world, that is something that is obligatory, not only upon Jews, but upon non-Jews as well. And again, it's a tremendous chiddush, I think. It's a philosophical, novelty that Rav Moshe introduces over here. But he says, based on that, that's why the Rambam, the Shulchan Aruch, write that the convert is obligated, miksas kavod, to an extent, in kibbud avo'eim. They don't have the full roster of the formal mitzvah of kibbud avo'eim, but to show gratitude for the fact that these people brought you into the world, and in most cases reared you, brought you up, took you to softball games, whatever they did, put dinner on the table every night.
Not you should with day school tuition though. You can't put that on the list.
Yeah, okay, all right,
Other
that's
important things though.
they sent you to Dalton. I don't know, whatever they did, they obviously invested in you. And even if they didn't invest in you, even if you were abandoned by your parents, at the very least they brought you into the world. So that itself demands a certain degree of respect, just as part of the Midah Tova of Hakaras HaTov.
Yeah, and I think, on the one hand, Rav Moshe is making a chiddush here because it doesn't say in the Gemara that a non-Jew has an obligation with kibbud avo'eim. In fact, it says the opposite, that Dama ben Asina volunteered it. But on the other hand, I don't have the material on me now. I think there's a Ran and there's some other Rishonim on, I think when it comes to issues like Tsar Balei Chaim, how could Bilam be held accountable for Tsar Balei Chaim? Issues like that, it's because Midos Tovos are not even really part of the 613 mitzvos. You go through Orchos Tzadikim and we find all sorts of psukim and we find gadatas, but many of the mitzvos we have, they don't fall under necessarily an explicit mitzvah in the Torah. There's more just this general imperative. Maybe it's v'lachta v'drachav, it's about emulating God's mitzvos, but it's more of just like this general imperative out there that even before Matan Torah, people should be able to intuit. I think it's one of the questions that Rishonim bring up before Matan Torah. And certainly for non-Jews who never got the Torah, how could they ever be held accountable for doing terrible, wicked things? And the idea is that there's almost like this, I don't know, maybe natural law is a loaded term, but there should be almost this kind of intuitive, objective idea of what is ethical and giving gratitude and Hakaras HaTov to two people who did one of the most fundamental gifts that they could possibly give to you. They brought you into this world and hopefully they raised you along the way. That's just something fundamentally that any human being should intuitively be able to feel and should be able to express. So it might not be formally the mitzvah of kibbud avo'eim, but you should be doing acts that resemble kibbud avo'eim because that would then represent giving Hakaras HaTov. So what he's basically saying is that this ger or yeres, she has to bring the kids there. And I almost wonder, it's like a shame it took, what was it, 20 years or so,
I
and for her mother to be ill for this to happen. I mean, it's I'm just reflecting on this right now. Like, imagine if Shiloh was asked at the beginning of her conversion process, how much tsar, how much pain could have been avoided because of that.
Right. No, I agree. I mean, when you introduced this tshuva, you used the term heart-wrenching, and I when I read this tshuva, that term comes to mind as well, and that very same question resonates in my own mind. Just imagine that had she been, asked this shaila or been instructed in this fashion, according to the approach of Rav Moshe, when she had converted. Again, the tshuva references the idea that she had been out of touch with her mother for 20 years. Imagine what could have happened during those 20 years. Again, the relationship could have been cast in a healthy way where she could have been able to maintain her Yiddishkeit while at the same time maintaining the relationship with her parents and having the relationship with the grandchildren, all that. It could have been so different. And it's just a shame to read the tshuva and realize that this woman is sick, and who knows how long the woman lived after the tshuva was written. Just such a shame that there was a missed opportunity here, perhaps because nobody thought to ask the shaila.
And he says there's a line in the tshuva that I noticed that he says sheyesh gam lacha shemeirov hatzar tichle b'yoser, that maybe because of all of this anguish and all of this all this pain that she's experiencing mentally, it's actually facilitated her becoming sick, more ill, more sick. And it just, you know, on the one hand, I finished reading the tshuva, and I had this feeling of, oh, Baruch Hashem, Rav Moshe saved the day. They could have a relationship with each other. And then, like you said, they just lost 20 years of life beforehand together. And it's really a tragic tshuva once you reflect upon what the implications are.
Right. And again, I think it's the tone that Rav Moshe said. So again, as far as I know, this is really the approach not only of our Beis Din, but Batei Din in general today, is to not encourage the convert or would-be convert to sever the relationship, but, you know, the opposite, to encourage them to try to, just figure out a way to make the relationship work despite the religious differences between the parents and the child, and to encourage the fostering of the relationship within that kind of context. You know, again, just to take a very simple example, there are a lot of converts who tell us that the parents are totally fine with them having their own set of pots and pans, which they keep locked up in their parents' home, and, you know, that they keep kosher. And when they come to visit, you know, they have their own burner, they have their own pot, you know, they're able to, to cook kosher for themselves or for the rest of the family if they want. And the parents are okay with that. And, you know, things like that, those accommodations, which if people are just a little bit thoughtful, they can work out, you know, can go a long way towards maintaining the relationship while enabling the convert to maintain a strict standard of halachic observance.
100%. And in our final few minutes, I just have two questions. And then, of course, any other concluding thoughts that you want to share with our listeners today. One is, I alluded to this earlier, which is, I find that a lot of the conversation about how to have healthy relations with relationship with one's family once they become a convert, once they convert to Judaism, there's almost like a very similar kind of discourse going around people who come balei tshuva, people who become observant and their parents are not observant. How do you manage it with the grandkids? I'm wondering if you see any fundamental distinction in the guidance that's given, ger versus bal tshuva in that sense. Obviously, there's some halachic differences, but fundamentally, is there anything practically different how one would go about advising someone who's a bal tshuva versus a ger? And then also, if there's just anything else that we should know about GPS, or we should know about your Beis Din and about gerus that we didn't touch on that you would want our listeners to be aware of.
Right. So I think to your point about, the difference, the potential differences in advising a ger or gioris versus a bal tshuva, balas tshuva, I think there are tremendous similarities in practice. Again, in theory, as Rav Moshe's tshuva makes clear, there is a fundamental difference between them because the Baal tshuva is obligated in Kibbutz Avoim, clearly. In other words, you know, I'm Jewish, my parents are Jewish. You know, there is a bona fide, you know, clear obligation of Kibbutz Avoim. So then you're talking about a balancing act between that and my need to maintain my religious standards. You know, prima facie, when it comes to a non-Jew, you know, who converted, there isn't that mitzvah of Kibbutz Avoim, so there's less to balance on the surface. And then the Chiddush of Rav Moshe is that he says, no, on some level there really is a mitzvah of Kibbutz Avoim. It's not called that, but it's the mitzvah of Hakaras HaTov, which the convert has. So there is a difference in theory, but I think in practice, you know, we would advise the people similarly. I would just add the following point, which I think is very important for people to consider, which is that a significant number of the gerus cases which we have on a certain level could be described as Baal Tshuva cases. What do I mean by that? So, you know, father's Jewish, right? The mother is halachically non-Jewish. Maybe she never converted. Maybe she converted in a less than stellar fashion. But, you know, very often in a family like that, the children will be raised, quote unquote, raised Jewish. In other words, the religion in the home is Jewish. So, you know, if that child at some point realizes that their halachic status as a Jew is compromised, true, they have to undergo a conversion process from a halachic perspective, but their experience is not so different than the experience of a Baal Tshuva. A very great percentage of the cases we deal with, maybe as high as 40%, is that kind of paradigm, you know, what I jokingly call, you know, converting from being Jewish to being Jewish, right? In other words, you grew up with a Jewish identity. The only religion you ever knew was Judaism. But you became frum and realized that your mother is not Jewish according to halachic standards. So again, that is a there's an obligation to have a conversion there from a halachic point of view, but the person's experience is really very similar to that of a Baal Tshuva. When they go home, for the holidays, they're going home for Pesach. They're not going home for Easter. That's the experience that they have in the house. Again, it's very important to keep that in mind. To the point of just, a concluding thought. As I mentioned at the outset, I think people are not fully aware of how many converts are among us. I think we have a tendency to think of converts as being very exotic. Many of us read as kids the Bamboo Cradle. Somebody who comes from a Far Eastern background who converts. An African prince who converts. We think of it as being the sort of out there unusual kind of circumstance. In I would venture almost every Orthodox synagogue today, you will find people who are either converts or children of converts. I think that's a testimony to how easily, in many cases, they've been able to blend into the Orthodox community. But partially that's because we have many cases of people who, again, as I said before, grew up Jewish, but not halachically so. They had a Jewish identity, and they converted from being Jewish to being Jewish. And there are many, many people like that. And it's incumbent upon us to show sensitivity to anyone who's a convert in our midst, to realize that almost by definition, there are complications in their relationships with their broader family and their parents. Again, maybe not to the extent of what Ramosha is talking about over here, but there are always going to be some complications. And to the extent to which we can go the extra mile in extending ourselves to them, it's a mitzvah daraisa. It's not just a nice thing. Havas ager. Most of the mitzvahs we do on a regular basis are the
If
rabbah.
you keep every chumrah of the Chazon Ish, then this certainly should be on your priority list
It's a
before
good
that.
idea. It's by the way, they tell a story about the Chazon Ish. The Chazon Ish once met a convert on the streets of Bnei Brak and started spontaneously dancing in front of the convert to make the convert feel good. So the Chazon Ish was machmir for a
Oh, so
halacha.
then it is a Chazon Ish
Yes,
chumrah.
a Chazon Ish chumrah. Why not?
Wow. So Rabbi Ram, I really appreciate you taking the time out of your busy schedule to share Torah with our listeners. I continue to admire not only your expertise, but also clearly the sensitivity that you exhibited in how you presented the tshuva. I want to wish you, God willing, much hatzlacha in your move and aliyah to Eretz Yisrael, God willing, b'mehera v'yameinu, and continue hatzlacha in all the remarkable things that you are doing for Klal Yisrael.
Amen. And you should have hatzlacha and bracha and all the wonderful things that you're doing should continue to produce wonderful fruits.
Amen. V'chein lemar. Thank you for listening to Shoot First, Ask Questions Later. Please make sure to subscribe to get the latest updates. And if you enjoyed this episode, please take a moment to rate us and leave a review. Do you have a response to the response that you want to share on the show? Please send your letter to the editor to MitchellMKurtz@gmail.com. And God willing, we would love to consider your perspective to be shared on a future episode. This is Moshe Kurtz, and I look forward to reviewing more responses with you next time on Shoot First, Ask Questions Later.